Hey, when you have health insurance, it's easy to forget about those out-of-pocket costs. Now, that can be a lot of money, but are your medical bills accurate? Now, it's estimated that over 50% of medical bills actually contain errors. Now, HealthLock can help. HealthLock technology securely connects with your insurance and flags any overbilling, wrong codes, or fraud. Now, you can even have HealthLock work on your behalf to get money back from select past bills. Now, to date, HealthLock has helped its members save over $130 million. Check them out online, healthlock.com. Go there today. Now, nowadays, $20 barely gets you a burger and fries or maybe a quarter of a tank of gas if you're lucky. You know what it will get you, though? For just $20 a month, you can get unlimited talk and text and plenty of 5G data from my cell phone company, Pure Talk. Make the switch today, and if you do it today, you save an additional 50% off your first month. They use the same 5G network, same cell towers as the big carriers, and most families saving close to $1,000 a month. Just go to puretalk.com/Sean, that's Sean, S-E-A-N. Make the switch today so you can actually afford that burger and fries. Hey, warmer days remind us of fond summer memories. Now you can make those moments year-round with the Michael Phelps Swim Spa by our friends at Master Spas, and that combines the leisure of a hot tub with the exercise benefits of a pool. Now, Master Spas technology is incredible with LED lighting, beautiful waterfalls, and those super powerful water jets installed in just one day. You're going to love it. Proudly made in America, use the promo code Hannity in the upper right-hand corner. That's masterspas.com for up to $1,000 off. You can exercise, relax, recover with the only hot tub and swim spa brand I trust, masterspas.com.
Let not your heart be troubled. You are listening to the Sean Hannity Radio Show podcast.
All right, look at this. Consumer confidence now at an 18-year high. Good news for you, the American people. Add to that, millions of them, are off the food stamp rolls, out of poverty. Record low unemployment in 14 states. We're now getting record revenue also to the federal government. Record low unemployment, records. African Americans, Hispanic Americans, Asian Americans, women in the workplace. Youth unemployment is now 20-year low. Jobs are coming back. Summer jobs are coming back for kids. And then you've got, by the way, if I didn't have a summer job as a kid, I would be in a mess. Summer jobs for kids are good because then they're not hanging out with their dopey friends doing dopey things and getting in dopey trouble. Just saying, normal, but if you have nothing to do all day, well, you're bound to start having too much free time on your hands, and that leads to something that's not going to be good for them. We have more jobs available than we have people on the unemployment rolls. We have a booming economy. We've got businesses investing like never before. We've got burdensome regulation that has been ripped and shredded down to its roots in terms of, you know, all the regulations the president has gotten rid of. We have a path towards energy independence we've never had. And all the Democrats want to talk about is taxicab medallions, you know, years gone by tax returns, years gone by loan applications, and all the real evidence as it relates to real Russian collusion and corruption at the highest ranks of the DOJ and the FBI and all the firings and demotions and retirements and why this is all happening and who's going to ultimately pay the price for their misdeeds. You know, we're going a little slow in that direction. Robert Mueller doesn't seem that interested in that level of real Russian interference, collusion, conspiracy as it relates to the 2016 election. But these numbers are staggering. Not only is Wall Street, look at yesterday with the news of the new U.S.-Mexico trade agreement, not only is Wall Street setting new records this week thanks to the president's economic policies, Main Street is now also, they are entering record territory. Average family may not have a huge stock portfolio, but there's no doubt at all what a big chunk of their family budget gets spent at stores like Walmart, where we, by the way, only smelly Trump people go there. I can smell them, Peter Strzok says. Smelly Trump people. They go to Walmart. I love Walmart. I love Target. I love Costco. I love Kmart. I've been to all these stores my whole life. I think it's great. You can get everything there. I even furnished a house thanks to Walmart. Anyway, according to the CEO of Target, he's never seen shoppers flock into his stores like they have in the last few months. By the way, all of these stores I've mentioned, they have significantly raised the wages of all workers. Bonuses are going out in record amounts. Target CEO, the guy's name is Brian Cornell. He's celebrating the best U.S. consumer environment he has seen in his career after the retailer posted their best quarterly results in more than a decade. He says we're seeing a great consumer response, unprecedented traffic. As we go back and look, we've never seen traffic growth like this, he said. There's no doubt that, like others, we're currently benefiting from a very strong consumer environment, perhaps the strongest I have seen in my career, he said in a conference call with analysts last week. It's a very healthy consumer environment. I've been doing this a long time. I think this is the healthiest environment I've ever seen. Now, we have the NAFTA agreement with the president in Mexico yesterday, the U.S.-Mexico trade agreement. And if the American people, you want to keep this economy humming, I just want to say one thing. There's always a fear, a terrible fear that people have. Well, we can't ask for a better deal. They might get, what, mad at us? So what? So what if people get mad at us? If they're ripping us off, if we don't have reciprocities, if they're taxing our goods going into their country and we're letting their goods in for free, we're well within our rights to demand not only free trade. I like free trade. I'm a free trade person. I think trade is good for everybody. Win-win. I like win-win. Anytime you make a deal where everybody wins, that's a good deal. But you're never going to get a better trade deal. You're never going to get these tariffs reduced that are hurting specific industries, especially like agriculture and the automobile industry in China and all these, you know, in the energy specter of things. All of these are doing better. I mean, it's crazy that people are afraid to negotiate. So the president's saying that, well, with NATO, you got to pay your fair share. We're paying 72 cents of every dollar. Step up and pay what that pay the amount that you agreed to pay based on your percentage of GDP. We're still going to pay the bulk of it, but you guys need to step up and pay more. And then especially for some of our NATO alliance countries, you know, Western European allies of ours, you know, if we're going to pay all that money for NATO, why is Angela Merkel turning around and giving Vladimir Putin and the hostile regime of Russia access and control of 70% of the lifeblood of Germany's economy? That doesn't make any sense. How about the U.S. and Western Europe work together and get transportation abilities for all the natural gas that we're going to be pulling out of the ground as the world's biggest producer? And in the meantime, not only will they have better security for themselves and you won't have a threat that Putin gets pissed off and turns off the spigot one day, but also we'll be hiring Americans to get all this natural gas and there'll be millions of high-paying career jobs for the working men and women in this country. In other words, the forgotten man and woman. That's all happening. Anyway, on top of all the amazing economic news we've been getting, the NASDAQ and S&P hit record highs yesterday thanks to the president's new deal with Mexico on trade. You know, if you want to keep this economy humming, you want your kids and grandkids to have a real future, you want to see American growth. After all, Obama said these jobs aren't coming back. I can guarantee you that if America puts the Democratic Party back in control of Congress in 70 days, these reports are going to begin to diminish probably immediately. And, you know, how soon people forget. I mean, it's been such a dramatic turnaround in a short period of time. And Democrats aren't running on, let's go back to the Obama economy. No, they're not. There's nothing honest and there's nothing positive in their agenda. What are they offering the American people? What, they want to impeach the president, but they're trying to keep it quiet. Oh, no, we're not going to talk about that now. We'll do it as soon as you give us power. We all know what they want to do. They're pretty transparent in what their goals are. They don't like this president. They think that they know better than we, the people. They always have. They want the investigations into the corruption in the election of 2016. They want all that to go away, too. And for all the talk about, well, Donald Trump's tax cuts are crumbs. Well, they want their crumbs back pretty desperately, and they're stating they want to rescind the tax cuts. Well, that's the extra money that people are investing. And that's the consumer good money that they're spending, or the home buying. And we're getting now good numbers in the home building and buying industry. You know, but this renegotiated deal with Mexico is a big win for America. Frankly, it's a big loss for China. FBI director told an audience at Aspen Institute Symposium last month that the real threat to America's national security is not Russia. It's China, which is actively working to supplant the U.S. as the world's preeminent economic and military power. And there's no doubt that Trump and China had the China threat in mind when he was renegotiating America's trade deal with Mexico. Because as the American Thinker explained today, not only is the new Trump trade deal with Mexico a big win for our economy, it's the first step ever taken by any American president to counter the Chinese threat. And the deal that the president just negotiated with Mexico, leaving Canada on the sidelines, is described as a win-win, benefiting both countries. The key benefit to both sides is that China is the big loser. By tightening local U.S.-Mexican content requirements 75%, up from 62.5%, imposing a requirement that workers be paid at least $16 an hour on 40 to 45% of the content, Chinese auto parts and other supplies are going to be squeezed out. And the experts, the exports from China will be replaced by content produced by Mexico and U.S. workers. And it's becoming clear that the president now is mobilizing America's largest trading partners in a bid to ratchet up pressure on China. So that's a good thing for everybody. We have some other breaking deep state news that we're going to get into in the course of the program today. Bruce Orr has been testifying for a good part of the day, and I'm getting a lot of interesting feedback from my sources that are in the know. And what we're hearing is that not only is Bruce Orr contradicting everything that others like Lisa Page had to say and Peter Strzok had to say, so you got a lot of covering up here, but apparently does not have particularly good answers as it relates to the pressing questions about what's going on here. Now, one thing that we did learn from the Associated Press, within weeks of launching the FBI's initial Russiagate investigation, Peter Strzok, then the FBI counterintelligence chief, began meeting with Bruce Orr. Remember, Bruce Orr was demoted so far two times. Why he has a job is beyond any understanding I have. And at the time, Orr was trying to pass bogus anti-Trump research compiled by Christopher Steele to the FBI. Now, Strzok testified in July that he met with Orr at least five times during late 2016 and early 2017. Now, shortly after Robert Mueller was appointed the special counsel in May of 2017, well, he tapped Strzok to be his lead Russiagate investigator. Strzok's decision to join Mueller's team came weeks after his meetings with Bruce Orr ceased. But Strzok certainly had the opportunity to share the bogus intelligence that Orr got from Steele with the rest of Mueller's team. Now, when you go back and you look at these text messages and handwritten notes between Christopher Steele and Bruce Orr, 70 contacts, email, text messages, and actual meetings between the two, and a lot of questions about what Nellie Orr was doing when she was working for Fusion GPS. But some of the things that we do know is that Christopher Steele was deathly afraid of being investigated by Charles Grassley's committee. We know that 2 days before James Comey was about to testify, that Christopher Steele was panicked and was writing his buddy Bruce Orr. Remember, they met before and just after and then into the Trump presidency, long after Christopher Steele had been fired, that they talked a lot about getting Christopher Steele phony information in the hands of special counsel Robert Mueller. 2 days before Comey's testifying, we know that he was worried and concerned whether or not the firewalls were going to hold, and also scared to death that he was going to be exposed. That means, you see, it's all beginning to come together. It's like a big jigsaw puzzle. But the most important thing you got to realize in, well, 70 days, there's going to be an election. Democrats would love to stop all these investigations. They want their crumbs back. They want to rescind the tax cuts. They want open borders. They want to fire ICE. They want America to be like California, a sanctuary state, a sanctuary country. And, of course, they want to impeach Trump, but they're not telling you that part, trying to keep it secret, because if they admit it, they're not going to get elected. So we're telling you what they're really planning. All right, as we roll along, Sean Hannity Show, 800-941-SEAN. If you want to be a part of this extravaganza, and there's a lot of news. We got into a lot of this last night with Sarah Carter as it relates to Stefan Halper. And this guy and all the contacts, it's interesting. He was in contact with George Papadopoulos, and he had all the Russian connections. He did. And he's asking all the questions. And Michael Flynn. And Carter Page. I mean, that seems, you know what, just doesn't seem exactly right. Anyway, we have the fourth highest ranking official in the Justice Department. You know, it's amazing how the media, even in the Lanny Davis case, I love CNN. And I'll give you more details in the next half hour. But here Lanny Davis admits that he is the author of a false report as it relates to Michael Cohen's knowledge of that Donald Trump knew about the Trump Tower meeting, the infamous meeting. Then he says, never mind. That is not true. I can't confirm that. And then CNN just stands by the story. I mean, you want to know why people chant fake news? That's one of the reasons. But also ignoring stories like, oh, Bruce Ohr and Strzok and Page and McCabe and Comey and everybody else. And exonerating Hillary, letting her go, the crime she had committed. You know, now we're hearing, and we have a report we'll get to later in the program today, how the Chinese actually hacked into Hillary's server. They got them all. And a report that Anthony Weiner's laptop, well, they didn't examine 99.5% of the emails on that laptop. And we read yesterday there's some 700,000 of them. They only went through a small number of them. But you got the fourth ranking, highest ranking official in the Justice Department, Bruce Ohr, and his close relationship with the former spy and dirty dossier author. He doesn't even stand by his own dossier, Christopher Steele, that Hillary paid for, without the permission and knowledge of his boss, Rod Rosenstein. And Ohr and Steele have this close relationship before and after the election and during the election. And then the emails that we've been able to unearth, the text messages, the handwritten notes showing how they work together to spread this propaganda, disinformation to the American people, stuff that they never verified on their own at all, ever, all for the purpose of winning an election and swaying the American people in the lead up to an election. It's pretty unbelievable. It's called lying. That's propaganda. It's what we'd expect. Speaking of Russian, we'd expect from the former Soviet Union. I'll explain when we get back. 800-941-SEAN is our number. We'll continue. All right, 25 till the top of the hour. 800-941-SEAN is our number. I'm getting all my inside sources telling me today was a very, very productive day as it relates to the two committees behind closed doors. Grilling, who was once the fourth highest ranking official in the U.S. Department of Justice, and that, of course, is the associate Deputy Attorney General Bruce Ohr. And Bruce Ohr's cultivated relationship with foreign spy, dirty dossier author Christopher Steele. Remember, Christopher Steele never stood by his own dossier. When he was questioned under oath in an interrogatory about his own dirty dossier with Russian lies that Hillary Clinton and the DNC funneled money through a law firm, Perkins Coie, that then hired Fusion GPS and Op Research Group. Bruce Ohr's wife worked for that group, and he didn't report that and identify that, as was mandated by the DOJ, separate issue. And then, of course, they hired Christopher Steele. And this is where all these ridiculous lies about Michael Cohen being in Prague, he'd never been in Prague, and hookers in a Ritz-Carlton in Moscow urinating in Donald Trump's bed, and so on and so forth. Most of it debunked, but he went on literally was out there, and his contact was the fourth highest ranking guy in the Department of Justice, Bruce Ohr, talking to Steele all the time before, during, and after the 2016 election. We had unearthed a lot of the text messages between the two, the emails between the two. We have handwritten notes between the two detailing how Bruce Ohr and Christopher Steele were working together to spread the dirty dossier information throughout every level of government, but more importantly, using that false, unverified Russian lies that Hillary paid for to propagandize and use as a disinformation campaign and a lying campaign to the American people. And then the contact even continued after the FBI cut all ties with Christopher Steele. The FBI was paying Christopher Steele at one point. Christopher Steele was fired for lying and leaking to the press. And in spite of being fired, it's still the information that he put together that was never verified or corroborated still become the basis of a FISA warrant application. The same people involved in this are the same people involved that gave Hillary the exoneration without even doing an investigation. No American would get away with what Hillary Clinton got away with in terms of top secret classified information in a mom and pop shop bathroom closet of Platte Rivers Network Server Company. And there's a report in the Daily Caller. We'll have more information on that later in the program today. That, in fact, the Chinese are one of the countries that literally hacked into Hillary's server. I've always said it's probably the Russians, yeah. But it's also probably the Chinese, the North Koreans, and the Iranians. And we do. We have a horrible job our government is doing protecting our secrets. That's why this is so serious. Because why? Because methods and sources and people, you know what? It puts their lives at risk. Anyway, they continue to stay in contact with each other. Bruce Orr knew that the dossier was bought and paid for by the Clinton campaign. Just like everybody that signed off on the FISA warrant, they all knew it. None of them bothered to do their own verification as the law requires, as FBI protocol requires. You know, you got people like Comey and Sally Yates, and the last renewal application, the fourth application in toto, was signed by Rod Rosenstein. You know, and everybody knew that Steele was doing Clinton's bidding, as was research firm Fusion GPS. They didn't care. And they also likely knew that the contents were unverified at best, but they didn't care. It was just one big Clinton bought and paid for lying machine with the highest levels of government helping and assisting her in her effort to lie to the American people in her search for power. It's like they did to Bernie Sanders in the primary. Why stop now? Bruce Orr's wife, Nellie, worked with Christopher Steele of Fusion GPS. I think that's a massive detail that Bruce Orr failed to report to the DOJ. And then you have some of his colleagues use the contents of the dirty dossier as the basis for the entire criminal investigation and FISA court warrant requests. So the Orr-Steele relationship was so seedy that in 2017, Steele expressed his concern. Jim Comey was about 2 days away from testifying in Congress. And Christopher Steele wrote to Bruce Orr, "Hey, just wondering if you had any news." Obviously, we're, I would assume Fusion GPS and him, we are a bit apprehensive given the scheduled appearance at Congress on Monday, hoping that important firewalls will hold. Many thanks. Okay, what are the firewalls? That would be the lies that they built together that everybody's in on. And according to Bruce Orr's handwritten memo, Steele was, quote, very concerned about the Comey hearing and very afraid that they will be exposed. Well, you're not fearing exposure unless you did something horribly wrong. And other communications show Steele's efforts to reach the special counsel. Yeah, Robert Mueller, using Bruce Orr as a conduit. And in November 2017, Orr writes to Steele, "Well, I passed on the questions, well, apparently to the special counsel, but I haven't gotten an answer yet." So Orr is literally feeding Christopher Steele's lies, Russian lies, to Bob Mueller. He fed it to the American people. He fed it to Fusion GPS. They're feeding it to everybody. Now they're feeding their lies to Robert Mueller as the witch hunt continues. Unbelievable. And his, you know, Democratic donor band of witch hunters. And Steele later wrote back, "Well, I'm presuming you've heard nothing back from your special counsel colleagues on the issue, on the issues you have kindly put forward from me. To say this is a disappointment is an understatement. I thought foreign nationals weren't supposed to impact our elections. You know, we deserve answers today, and I'm hearing we're getting some." this closed door session taking place before the House Judiciary and Oversight Committee. It's important we get answers to everything. You know, when did Steele, what did he mean when he said important firewalls will hold, hoping that they hold? What are those firewalls? Why was Steele so worried about his words being exposed? Who in the DOJ knew that Steele was feeding information to Orr? Who knew that he was feeding information to Robert Mueller? Why didn't anybody ever step up and say, maybe we need to verify this, considering so many high-ranking DOJ, FBI officials have signed off on his dossier that he himself discounted when he was threatened with perjury in an interrogatory in Great Britain? So who in the DOJ knew that Steele was feeding information to Orr? And was Orr working on the Russia probe without Rod Rosenstein's permission or knowledge? Who in the special counsel investigation did Orr pass along Steele's issues to? How many contacts were there with the special counsel? And I think this is important. Did any of the FISA applications contain information from Orr's work with Christopher Steele? And did Orr ever check out the authenticity, veracity of what Steele was putting out? Did he do any background work on it? Did he ever ask his wife about it? Why was his wife working for Fusion GPS? What was her role there? That's just the tip of the iceberg. There's a Federalist article outlining several topics that got to be addressed. I know this has nothing to do with, you know, years gone by bank loan applications or filed tax returns from years and years ago or taxi medallions. But if you're looking for collusion and not the witch hunt, maybe you want to look into this area. You know, it's the whole thing is just so sick and ugly and twisted and such an abuse of power. It's unbelievable. Mark Meadows is saying that we've learned new information suggesting the FBI and DOJ leaked to the press. In other words, used articles to then obtain FISA warrants. That's like in the case of Michael Isikoff and Yahoo News. Yeah, they were used to, remember, Christopher Steele fed the information to Michael Isikoff. Christopher Steele, remember, the dossier he put together that he doesn't even believe is true. That became the bulk of the application to spy on an opposition party campaign associate in the lead up to the election and post-election. But then they also leaked articles coming from the same source, Christopher Steele, circular sourcing. And they tried to make it seem like, oh, these are separate sources. Mark Meadows said, we've learned new information suggesting our suspicions are true. FBI, DOJ have previously leaked information to the press and used those same press stories as a separate source to justify FISA warrants. Until now, we've known that the Steele dossier leaked information directly to Yahoo News and Mike Isikoff. That became a supporting piece of evidence in the FBI's FISA warrant application and then subsequent renewal applications. So while we've known that Steele fed Isikoff with this information from the dubious dossier, and the FBI used both Steele's dossier and Isikoff's Steele-inspired article to game the FISA system, Mark Meadows now says that the FBI and DOJ directly leaked information to the press, which then they used for the same type of FISA scheme. You know, strong evidence discovered in January suggested the former FBI employee, Lisa Page, leaked privileged information to Devlin Barrett, formerly of the Wall Street Journal, now with the Washington Post. Whether any of Barrett's reporting was subsequently used to obtain a FISA warrant is unknown at this time. And Meadows also, you know, his big tweet out on Monday, just coming hours before Bruce Orr testified from earlier today. But anyway, what you have here is Orr's role as a conduit between Steele and the FBI continued for months, resulted in 12 separate FBI interviews, including several after Trump's inauguration. This thing stinks to high heaven. Trey Gowdy vowed that we're going to get to the bottom of what he did, why he did it, and who he did it in concert with, and whether he had the permission of the supervisors of the DOJ. That's why they didn't fire him, because they want people in the room representing him. FBI agent told Congress the Bureau used to leak stories to obtain FISA warrants. Pretty unbelievable. Now we've got this whole issue of what's going on with Lanny Davis. Known Lanny Davis for years, arguing back in the Clinton impeachment years. Never had anything against Lanny. I just know that there's nothing I can ever say that's ever going to convince him that, in fact, the Clintons aren't the people that I think he believes they are. But anyway, putting that aside, so Lanny Davis became the attorney for Michael Cohen, and he's telling BuzzFeed and other places that he was the source for CNN's article last month claiming that Cohen would tell Robert Mueller that President Trump knew about the June 2016 Trump Tower meeting. Remember, with the Russian woman, Russian attorney. Remember, Fusion GPS met with that attorney both before and after the Trump Tower meeting. And it all turned into the Magnitsky Act. It was about Russian adoption. Anyway, since CNN's article published, Davis has now admitted that to the Washington Post and CNN that he actually has no such knowledge of Cohen knowing any such thing. And he also regretted lying about it on CNN last week. And then he told Anderson Cooper, I think the reporting of the story got mixed up in the course of the criminal investigation, but denied being the source for the original story. That turned out to be a lie. And he said, I made a mistake. I didn't mean to be cute, he said, but I made a mistake. And the original report by, Carl Bernstein, hardcore leftist that he is, and Marshall Cohen claimed that Michael Cohen had personally witnessed Donald Trump Jr. informing Trump of the meeting. Trump denied the report at the time. Now Davis is backtracking. This is where all the impeachment talk came last week. Is anyone going to go on TV tonight and say, yeah, we screwed up? No, just the opposite. CNN is actually standing by their fake story. Even though the source that they had, that they know, they're still standing by it. You just can't make this stuff up, but it's true. Anyway, we got Hillary Clinton's emails hacked by China. As I said, we're going to get to that later. One other thing that we've begun to put together. First, Lindsey Graham, I don't have much time here. He said this morning that he's seen plenty of evidence of corruption at the DOJ and FBI. I've seen no evidence of collusion after 2 years. Mueller's been looking at it. We'll see what he says. But I've seen plenty of evidence of corruption at the DOJ and the FBI. That should be stunning. Not one Democrat seems to care. Reverse the roles. Imagine if the Republican Party had paid a foreign agent to go to Russia to get dirt on Hillary Clinton, and they used it to get a warrant into her campaign and never told the court who paid for it. Front page story everywhere. That's pretty corrupt. When the U.S. attorney and the DOJ lawyers say it's our job to stop Trump, could you imagine what would happen if they said it's our job to stop Clinton? Pretty good point. It's a pretty good point. All right, 70 days. You want to keep what you elected in 2016? Well, that's what it's going to take. Everybody getting motivated and out to vote. The single most important midterm election ever in our lifetime. All right, the big news of today, Bruce Orr's testimony and varying accounts I'm getting, a very productive day is what I'm hearing. A lot of information was exposed. A lot of the important questions that we raised last night, apparently there were answers to. Sarah Carter, Fox News investigative reporter and contributor, and Greg Jarrett, Fox News legal analyst. Thank you both for being here. In Orr's notes from May 10, 2017, he goes on to write that Steele is concerned about a letter from the Senate Intelligence Committee writing three things. Ask them three questions. What info did you give to the U.S. government? What was the scope of your investigation? Do you have any other info that would assist in our question? Now, SarahAcarter.com reported this week text messages between Steele and Orr revealing that Steele was anxious about Comey's testimony, was hoping the, quote, important firewalls hold because he didn't want to get exposed. Anyway, those text messages came up today in these hearings. Sarah, I know you've been briefed by a number of people and talked to a number of people because you have been hanging outside that briefing room pretty much all day.
Yes, a lot of news coming out of Bruce Orr's testimony today to Congress, mostly on the back end. Of course, this was behind closed doors, Sean, so the public, unfortunately, didn't get a chance to see it for themselves. and neither did we. So we're taking information that's coming out, that's trickling out from the testimony. I tell you, there were a couple of big bombshells today for me. One is that the FBI and others knew. I mean, this was consistent. They obviously knew that they were using Bruce Ohr as a back channel for Christopher Steele's information, even after they fired him. I think the bigger news here, and this is something that people are not really talking about, was when did the FBI actually learn about Nellie Ohr? When did the FBI learn that she was working for Fusion GPS? And when did they learn about the fact that Christopher Steele was biased against, against President Trump, that he would do anything, in his own words, Bruce Ohr's own 302, that was his interview with the FBI, you know, where he said, you know, that he said Christopher Steele basically did not want to see Trump become president, would basically do anything to see that. Well, guess what? They knew it before they sought the FISA on Carter Page.
Wow.
That is big news, because they did not disclose that to the FISA court judges. And I'm telling you that when that information actually sinks in, I mean, this is something that I'm certain the FISA courts will be very angry about. And it's certainly something that plays right into what we've been seeing all along, is that information was withheld from the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court.
Well, they withheld that Hillary Clinton paid for it. They never verified it as is required by law and FBI protocol. And when did they discover his bias? Oh, well, that was before the FISA application. One question I'd like to know is, you know, when he finally gave an interrogatory and wouldn't even stand by his own dossier, and then you have the exchange between Bruce Ohr and Christopher Steele. Again, he's not standing by his dossier. He said it's raw intelligence, maybe 50-50. Then the question is, when did they know that, and were any of the FISA renewals based on that?
Absolutely. They were definitely pushing in that direction. As for that exact specific question, Sean, I don't have an answer to that yet. I'm sure if they did ask the question, we're going to get the answer to it. I can certainly tell you that there was a lot of concern among congressional members that that's exactly what happened, that they did know before they put in the FISA application. I think that's why it was so imperative that they find out, you know, who authorized this. That was one of the questions I was really concerned with.
Did we get any answers to what the firewalls comments holding were about, or afraid I'm going to get exposed?
I actually asked a number of people about that. There's one that has not gotten back to me yet, but the few that I asked, they did not have an answer to that question yet.
In other words, they hadn't asked the question up until that point?
They hadn't asked the question through almost the whole first half of the hearing.
All right, let me ask, bring Greg Jarrett in. Greg, it seems like a massive fraud perpetrated on FISA court judges in these applications, and it's now getting more real every day.
That's right. It was actually in September of 2016 that Steele told Ohr he was, quote, this is a direct quote, desperate that Donald Trump not get elected, passionate about him not being president. So given an extreme bias and motivation to lie, I mean, all contact with Steele should have been terminated. You know, toss his dossier in the garbage. But Ohr and the FBI were determined to use Steele and his unverified documents to damage Trump. So the question today, and I think Sarah has found out the answer, is when did Ohr pass that information, Steele's quote, onto the FBI? Was it before the first FISA application was filed? I believe it was October 23rd of 2016. And I think the answer that Sarah is getting from people who are in the deposition is that, yes, the FBI knew of that bias.
Do we know if it's going to get released, the transcript at least?
I don't know that yet, Sean. I think that would be fascinating. I think that would be vitally important for the American people, first off. I mean, this was a deposition. It made it easier on Bruce Ohr, I'm guessing, to go and speak to members of Congress. There wasn't what people would call a big media circus with, you know, cameras pointed at him and flashing bulbs in the front of the room. But it's really important for the American people to have clarity on this, to understand what was going on. to put the pieces together. I mean, this affects every single one of us, and it's affected our administration. I mean, look at this. For the last 2 years, this is all our country mostly is talking about, and it led to a special counsel investigation of the Trump campaign, and now we're finding all of this information out, how all of these players operated with one another. I'll tell you one more thing that that I was able to find out. One was the question that we all asked was whether or not anyone above Bruce Orr knew that he was actually a source for the FBI. And what he testified before Congress was that he did not inform his superiors that he was being used as a source. Now, the FBI knew, and this is even more interesting, who at the FBI knew that Orr was being used as a back channel for Christopher Steele? Well, if it was only the agents, you'd say, okay, well, you know, nobody up above knew anything. Now what I'm hearing is that Andrew McCabe was very well aware of what was going on. Lisa Page and Peter Strzok also knew what was going on, and by the way, had met with Bruce Orr a number of times and communicated with him. So the highest levels of the FBI, that tells me if Andrew McCabe knew what was going on, certainly Director Comey knew what was going on because he was the deputy.
But he was a regular back channel to the FBI without any supervision. And he said all the information was biased, wouldn't be allowed in court for evidence, but yet it was used as a FISA warrant, which speaks poorly of everybody that signed off on that. David Schoen is also with us, civil and criminal defense attorney. What's your take on all of this? Well, we'll have more by the time we get on TV tonight at 9 as it's just breaking up, but what's your take, David?
I'd like to make a point about the FISA court. Remember, the FISA court rules require the government to file a supplemental petition if they have omitted or misstated any fact in any application. Where is that supplemental submission now? I just want to get a little bigger picture. You know, you and Sarah Carter, with her intelligence in this case, have broken what I find to be one of the most bizarre stories in the history of the Justice Department and maybe the country. This is a guy who's a higher up in the Justice Department in Bruce Orr. You've only now started to unravel this stuff the last several weeks, operating what essentially looks like a private security operation on his own agenda, and on, not just his own agenda, though, on his agenda, the agenda of Chris Steele and all of these other people working. For the American people, this has to be an absolutely astonishing set of facts. And for people who are suspicious about private actors operating behind the scenes to undermine the government, if this isn't some evidence of that, if this doesn't give rise to those kinds of conspiracy theories based on facts, I don't know what does. I've never heard of such a thing. And to have his wife working with his GPS fusion, he's not a private actor here. He works in the Justice Department. I'm not interested in his wife feeding him information to then fed to the FISA court. My God, what kind of process is that?
And I got to ask, it seems that the FBI always hangs on to these guys. He's been demoted twice, Greg Jarrett, because I suspect they want to control what he says. And they want in the in terms of the process, and they want FBI lawyers involved. And remember, Lisa Page was the lawyer for Andrew McCabe, or one of the chief lawyers for Andrew McCabe.
Sure.
So you notice they didn't fire Peter Strzok until after he testified. Yeah. Now, I guess Bruce Orr, that's well, I think it's now it's a death sentence career wise for Bruce Orr.
Well, it should be. He should have been terminated. It was a direct violation of FBI procedures to use a discredited source. To circumvent the rules, the Bureau used Orr as a conduit to continue its relationship with Steele. Orr would communicate with Steele, then pass the information to the FBI. And in fact, Peter Strzok, the lead investigator in the case, confirmed in his congressional testimony, you'll recall, and this is a quote, the FBI received documents and material from Mr. Orr. And, you know, Orr knew that Steele was a nefarious, untrustworthy character. And Steele was double-dipping, receiving money from the Hillary Clinton campaign and also on the payroll of the FBI from January of 2016 to November of 2016. Orr was making a profit off of this as well. He's peddling the false Steele document while benefiting from it financially. His wife, Nellie, an employee getting paid by the Clinton campaign?
I want to know what the firewalls were that he was so afraid of.
Well, me too, Sean.
I want to know what he was fearful of being exposed. His words, not mine. Sarah.
Well, his illicit activities, his illegal activities. You're not allowed to use illegal documents to pursue a criminal investigation. And that's what they were doing. And so he was fretting to Orr that he might be exposed. And so the firewall was Bruce Orr and Comey and McCabe.
And what about his, have you gotten my information to your special counsel? That means he was trying to funnel this phony information to Robert Mueller. I want to know how many contacts were made with Robert Mueller's office, either with Orr or Steele directly, and what information was passed on.
That's right, Sean. And if you talk about firewalls, right, if I'm using the word firewalls, are the firewalls going to hold? That means I put with other people something in place so that I will not be scathed by what is possibly going to come out. And so your question's right on the money. What was the firewall? What were they trying to do? How did they set up these firewalls? Who was the go-betweens? Of course, we know Bruce Orr was a go-between, but he was asking him directly, and maybe Greg's right. I mean, maybe the fact that, you know, he put Bruce Orr as the middleman, the back channel to the FBI, maybe Bruce Orr was one of those firewalls, you know? But he said firewalls, plural. And that makes me wonder, what were they talking about? How did they intend to protect one another, and who all was involved in it? I mean, look, Lisa Page had come out. She had testified behind closed doors, and according to the sources that I spoke with, she was very nonchalant about, you know, Bruce Orr, like, oh, I really didn't talk to him. I wasn't really involved with him. She really downplayed any contact with Bruce Orr.
I got to put you on hold there. More with David, more with Greg Jarrett, more with Sarah Carter. As we continue, Sarah Carter and Greg Jarrett and David Schoen and Bruce Orr testifying today before two committees. Bruce, we'll give you final thoughts. I'm sorry, Bruce. David. I'm sorry, yeah. Sean. I was thinking of Bruce Orr.
I've got enough.
Oh, man.
That,
you know
I'll
what? Linda's
anyway.
Been yelling at me all day about little itsy bitsy mistakes. Now I make another one.
Listen, we do look a little bit alike.
good grief.
I would say there is little more dangerous.
Why don't you just say what you want to say instead of sitting back there laughing at me like that? It's so embarrassing. Say what you need to say.
I'm not saying anything. I'm allowing Bruce/David/Sarah/Greg to answer your final question in these final moments.
Good grief.
Everyone looks alike. It happens.
One itsy bitsy mistake. Good grief.
I say nothing. David, right. What did you want to say about Bruce, your brother?
Yeah. Right. Here's what I say. In recent memory, there is nothing like this we have ever seen in the Department of Justice. I can't think of much that's much more dangerous than having employees in the Department of Justice acting on their own personal agenda, forgetting their allegiance to the rule of law. There's a reason we've never heard of people like Bruce Orr and others who hold those positions. I might run across them in my field, but there's a reason the general public doesn't know them, because it's an office that runs by the rule of law generally, not based on personalities with like thinkers perverting the law, frankly, for their own agenda, so that we have now the inmates running the asylum. It has to stop.
Sarah, 15, 20 seconds.
I agree with David. Look, it has to stop, but we're still in the middle of an investigation. There's still so much more information out there that we need to get to the public. And once it's all out there, maybe we can clean out these agencies and move forward as a country.
And we're going to have a lot more on this on Hannity tonight. Greg, you got the last word today.
Ironically, Clinton and her campaign not being investigated for violating campaign laws. And here you've got obvious violations by Bruce Orr, James Comey, Christopher Steele, the whole gang.
Firewalls, what were they? Afraid of being exposed, and what was handed over to Robert Mueller? Hopefully we'll have those answers by 9 o'clock tonight. Ron DeSantis, big primary in Florida, he's next.
The radio show the mainstream media loves to hate. This is the Sean Hannity Show.
All right, 25 till the top of the hour, 800-941-SEAN, toll-free telephone number. It's primary day in states like Arizona and Florida. Florida, I'm paying the most attention to, especially because we're watching the gubernatorial showdown with my good friend, Congressman Ron DeSantis, Freedom Caucus member. He's had a busy day. He's back in Florida as he is getting ready to get some, hopefully, some good results tonight. I did see a massive swing of support in your direction, thankfully, and I think it's going to be a good day for you and Governor Rick Scott, who will be going up against Bill Nelson. It's a great 1-2 punch.
Well, that's right, Sean. You know, you came down, I think it was July 2nd, and I can say 100% above board that every single poll we took on the campaign after Hannity came down, I was winning. So I think that we're going to have a big night. I think it's going to be a big victory. And I obviously appreciate your support. I mean, I had people coming up to me yesterday. We were touring Florida saying how neat it was to come out to the events where you were at on the west coast of Florida. So,
well, we had a great time. I don't think you'd want to tell the president that, considering the president has been very active in his support for you.
Well, and that obviously is a very big deal. And he came and had a huge rally, and it was phenomenal. And I think that really, you know, let us go even higher. But it is true that in that early July period, that's when we really started shooting up in our polling. And so that just so happens to coincide with the big Hannity swing. So,
well, you know, I enjoyed those town halls. I mean, we were in Fort Myers. We were in Tampa. We were in the Panhandle, Matt Gaetz territory. And we had a great time. We really really enjoyed it. And, you know, more importantly, Florida is well positioned now. I think Governor Rick Scott did a phenomenal job. I'm so glad he decided to run for the Senate. I think that could be a pickup for the Republicans. It's desperately needed in this election year. But more importantly, I think the people of Florida, you know, with all the incoming population to the state, as people are moving from high tax states down to states like the Carolinas and Florida and Texas, I mean, you know, you guys have been more than anybody able to keep up with the infrastructure. You still have no state income tax. These are all pledges you've made.
Oh, yeah, of course. And I think that Governor Scott, I think, has set the standard for job creation. We're well positioned to build off what he did. And guys like you, Sean, and other people who do business in places like New York, with the tax reform that passed, you know, the SALT deduction being taken away, I think you're going to see even more investment being driven to Florida if I win, or when I win. And they know we're going to have another governor who's going to be supportive of business, who's going to want low taxes and reasonable regulation. If a Democrat gets in, I think it's going to be like shooting ourselves in the foot in Florida. We'll have squandered a golden opportunity to really make us the number one place to be in our country for economic opportunity.
May seem like an odd question, but, you know, having a little place down in Southwest Florida, this red tide has become a big deal. It's not the first time that this has happened. And I know you're active and involved in trying to find the proper balance and solution. How do you deal with it?
Well, so red tide itself naturally occurs, been happening for a century or more. But what happens is when the Army Corps of Engineers discharges polluted water out of Lake Okeechobee in the center of part of our state into the Caloosahatchee River, you know, all that polluted water ends up mixing with the red tide, and that makes it really, really toxic. And that's what we've seen. So I'm going to be working with the Trump administration to get the federal match for this big reservoir we're going to build so that you can clean the water, send it to the Everglades, and you're not putting this water in Florida's rivers. So I'll get that done. It's very, very important, because what happened, Sean, with the red tide is you have so many segments of our economy that is affected by that. You know, our fishermen, you know, our boaters, tourism, real estate. It really runs the gamut. So we've got to deal with it, and we will deal with it. And Governor Scott, you know, he was able to push through this reservoir for the state portion, which was good. We're now going to get the federal portion. The president's supportive of it. Mick Mulvaney's supportive of it. So we're going to pass that this year. And as governor, I'm going to work to get that implemented.
Let's talk about the, you're a member of the House Oversight Committee with the testimony of Bruce Orr. What can you tell us about it?
I'm not allowed to necessarily say a lot now. I think we need to release this transcript to the public, so hopefully we'll be able to do that. But what I can say is this, that the suspicions that many of us had about what went on during the election and even into Trump's presidency, you know, Orr's testimony is basically substantiating a lot of the concerns that we had. I'm in Florida, it's a thunderstorm. And remember, this is a guy who was one of the highest ranking officials in Obama's Justice Department. He reported directly to Sally Yates, who was the deputy AG under Loretta Lynch, very anti-Trump. And he's basically serving as a conduit to get this opposition research and funnel it into a counterintelligence investigation. And he continued to do that and work with Steele and Glenn Simpson even after the FBI cut ties with Christopher Steele. So this is totally inappropriate conduct. I think he abused his power. And, you know, I think what we need to do is get him to testify publicly, you know, now that we've done this this behind closed doors deposition.
Yeah, well, I think we know a lot about Bruce Orr and the amount of contacts that he had with Fusion GPS and Christopher Steele and the whole nexus now that is involved here and his wife working for Fusion GPS. You know, I just look at these quotes that we were able to unearth, and, you know, 2 days before James Comey is about to testify, we have Christopher Steele asking Orr, I hope the firewalls are going to hold and I don't want to get exposed. Those are pretty damning statements to me. And Bruce Orr, you know, on top of everything else, Bruce Orr, by this point, at some point after he was fired, he was still keeping in contact with him. He was working with Christopher Steele to even get this phony dossier information into the hands of Robert Mueller. It had never been verified. It had never been corroborated. Still was the basis of a FISA warrant application and three subsequent applications. So when you have all of that happening, one must ask the question, why was Bruce Orr so active in dealing with somebody who in Great Britain himself wouldn't even stand by his own dossier?
Because I think he was part of the mobilization of the Obama Justice Department to try to stop Trump. And then it obviously carried on into Trump's presidency. Orr was a guy who was involved with organized crime. That was his forte. So how he's getting involved in this counterintelligence stuff, it doesn't make sense. He shouldn't have been doing it, but he was doing it because his wife was working for Fusion, and he was an easy conduit for the information. He was also involved in some of the texts allude to this. Orr was involved in leaking probably to the New York Times. Even Strzok was concerned about that during a time. So I think Orr is really a nexus between the liberal media, the Clinton campaign, the Obama Justice Department. So many things come around this guy that you know, he's got a lot of information. I mean, I think we're getting some of it, but I'd be surprised if he was willing to give everything. He's going to admit to the things he knows we have documentation for, but I'll bet you he'll try to minimize his role in other areas.
Well, earlier this afternoon, Darrell, ISIS said that Bruce Orr's testimony is in direct conflict with Lisa Page's account. Didn't explain specifically what it was, but, you know, House investigators are trying to track down the truth, and nobody seems to be held accountable by the time, you know, this goes on and on and on. I mean, why does this guy still have a job? And am I right in my perception that the FBI doesn't fire anybody until they're fully, you know, debriefed, if you will, by congressional committees because they want to keep their tentacles and their lawyers involved in the entire process?
Well, that's exactly right. Of course, Orr should not have a job at all. I mean, he got demoted
almost twice.
A year ago or... Yeah, I mean, he's gotten demoted twice, but he should have just been fired the first time. I mean, here you are using your position to try to run interference on an election. That's a totally inappropriate use of that position, and he shouldn't be working in the Justice Department. So to keep all these people around, they kept Strzok around forever, Orr needs to go, and I hope he goes quickly.
Do you see any of these guys actually getting charged with crimes?
Not until we have a new attorney general, it seems to me. I mean, we sent a referral, as you know, many months ago. No response. We listed all the different offenses for all these people, including Orr, including Peter Strzok. Nothing has happened. Heck, even McCabe hasn't been. There haven't been any charges brought against McCabe. And the IG said that he lied 3 times. So it just seems to me that under the current regime, you have different sets of rules that are applied to those higher echelon officials in charge of enforcing a law against the rest of the American people. They would not cut the American people that same slack, but it seems like they get special treatment, and that is just dead wrong.
All right, we wish you well for the voters in Florida. You get an extra hour, by the way, if you're in the panhandle. Primary day, and Governor Rick Scott is now looking to take on Bill Nelson for the U.S. Senate, and our friend Congressman DeSantis is now looking to run as the Republican to build on the great track record of Governor Scott, and I know you do a great job, and I know that Florida does not want to go backwards because you're doing so well, one of the most prosperous areas in the entire country. I can't believe, you know, with all the income tax money we have in New York and New Jersey and California, it's better infrastructure that you have down in Florida. It's pretty amazing, actually.
We got to keep it going. We got to build on it, Sean. You're exactly right. We can't look back. Going back 25 years and thinking things were better, that's just not the truth. We're better in almost every area now. We got to keep building on that.
All right. Thanks for being with us. 800-941-SEAN is our number. You want to be a part of the program. News Roundup, information overload. At the top of the hour, Hannity investigation, Daily Caller breaking a huge story regarding the hacking of Hillary Clinton's unsecure server by the Chinese. And the evidence seems irrefutable. But let's get to the phones in the meantime. Dittmar is in New Jersey. Dittmar, how are you?
Hello, Sean.
Yes, sir.
How you doing, Sean?
What's going on, Dittmar, New Jersey?
A big supporter.
Thank you.
And I watch you every night.
Thank you very much.
I got to ask you a question.
Okay.
I keep hearing of all this stuff that's going on with the Hillary Clinton and the DOJ and all this corruption. I just called up to find out, what can we, the American people, do to push the investigation to reopen the Hillary Clinton investigation? I mean, as a United States citizen, I'm getting fed up by hearing all this corruption and every day all these things coming out, and no one's doing anything. Like, does someone out there have something that we could either email to or text to or call to and complain?
The only thing we need
until something gets done.
Well, we had a big step today. We broke a big story yesterday. Bruce Orr contradicting Lisa Page, but more importantly, what we're learning bit by bit, layer by layer of the onion, we've peeled it across. We've seen how many people fired, how many people demoted, how many people that have quit their jobs, and the information keeps coming in pretty much on a daily basis. They cannot cover this up forever. The only thing, the most important thing people can do, if you really want to answer to that question, is go out and vote in 70 days. Because besides impeaching Trump, and besides rescinding the tax cuts and stealing our crumbs back, besides keeping Obamacare, besides getting rid of ICE and keeping open borders, they want to stop these investigations. And if the Democrats take control, they'll reverse it. There's no agenda to help the forgotten men and women in this country. They want to stop the president. They want to put all Republicans on defense. They want endless investigations into nothing. The same things we've been doing for 2 years. If you want the country to continue to progress, look at consumer confidence, an 18-year high. That's because of the policies of the president. And they want to stop him cold in his tracks. They have no positive agenda. There's nothing that they are saying that they would do that would make this country a better place. It is the most important midterm election in your lifetime. You're asking me a question. What can you do? Get out to vote. Get 10 friends of yours out to vote and act like it's President Trump that's on the ballot. That's what I would do. It's very hard for a charismatic person. You can't have a charisma transplant. Some of these Republicans suck. They're just weak and they can't even give a speech. But at the end of the day, they're not the Democrats. The Democrats that would impeach and raise taxes and have open borders and keep Obamacare and all of these other things. So, you know, we've got to take it seriously. You know, the anti-Trump forces think they're energized and organized. I don't care what district you're in. I don't care what city you're in or what town you're in or what state. Go vote on election day in 70 days. Take the time to vote. That's the most important thing you can do. Then we'll have time to get to the bottom of all of it. And I guarantee you people will be going to jail.
But
right?
The thing is, I believe that it's so deep where everyone's covering. You know why I believe what's going on? It's being covered because if Hillary Clinton falls, there's going to be a whole bunch of people in back of her that are going to fall like dominoes, and they're protecting her because they don't want that to happen. That's why I believe the deep state is fighting. It's so deep, it's unbelievable.
Of course they are. But you know what? In spite of it, we've been able to expose a lot. We literally have turned the corner. We're almost there. And this whole thing is coming crumbling down before your eyes. We just need a little more time. I got to run, though. Thank you, Dittmar. 800-941-SHAWN. News Roundup, Information Overload, and your calls coming up straight ahead. All right, when we come back, we have an investigative report as it relates from the Daily Caller about a huge story regarding the hacking of Hillary Clinton's unsecure server, you know, in the mom-and-pop shop bathroom closet. And, in fact, a Chinese-owned company penetrated the former Secretary of State's private email server, according to sources now that the Daily Caller has, and the company inserted codes that forwarded copies of Clinton's emails to the Chinese company in real time. This is not good. All right, we'll get to that. Also, your calls in the final half hour. I want to remind you, Blinds.com, they're not just in the blinds business. They're in the complete home transformation business, because that's what's going to happen when you get brand new custom blinds and shades and shutters and drapes, all the big names from Blinds.com. Now, you're going to feel like you got a total remodel without the cost. Now, they're going to guide you through the entire measure install process for free. You're going to get free samples, free shipping, and you always get free online professional design consultation. Now, that on top of their already low prices, no store can beat them. Blinds.com, not surprisingly, is the number one online retailer of custom window coverings for all of these reasons. And now through August the 29th, you can save up to 35%. Plus, take an additional 5% off site-wide just by using the promo code Hannity. All right, on top of their already low prices, 35%, an extra 35%, plus an additional 5% off site-wide at Blinds.com, promo code Hannity. Blinds.com, promo code Hannity. All right, so when we get back, News Roundup, Information Overload Hour. Well, I've been one of the few people saying it. It may not just be Russia. It may be the Chinese. It may be North Korea. It may be Iran. It could be a whole variety of people that, yeah, they're still able to hack into, Hillary's mom and pop shop bathroom closet server. Yeah, risking sources, names, and methods. All right, we'll continue.
Mr. Rucker reported to those of you, the four of you there, in the presence of the IC, IG, attorney, that they had found this anomaly on Hillary Clinton's emails going through a private server. And when they had done the forensic analysis, they found that her emails, every single one except for four, over 30,000 of them, were going to an address that was not on the distribution list. It was a compartmentalized bit of information that was sending it to an unauthorized source. Do you recall that?
Sir, I don't.
Well, but he went on to explain it. And you didn't say anything.
No.
You thanked him. You shook his hand. But the problem was that it was going to an unauthorized source that was a foreign entity unrelated to Russia. And from what you've said here, you did nothing more than nod and shake the man's hand when you didn't seem to be all that concerned about our national integrity of our election when it was involving Hillary Clinton.
Did you wipe the server?
What, like with a cloth or something?
I don't know.
All right, that was Louis Gohmert and Ed Henry asking Hillary out, did you wipe the server? You mean like with a cloth, Ed? You mean like with a cloth? One of the now infamous answers she gave. Our friends over at the Daily Caller have an amazing story out today. Now, this follows on the heels of a report yesterday that, in fact, only 0.5% of the Hillary emails that were on the Wiener laptop were actually looked at. Some 700,000 were ignored, and it is believed by people within law enforcement that were involved in the case that there was almost 700,000 emails, and they believe the entire missing 33,000 emails would be included in all of that. Now, that's a big deal. Now, it gets taken a step further, which I have been, I think, a lone voice here in saying that why do I imagine not just Putin and the hostile regime of Russia, but probably the Chinese, probably the North Koreans, probably the Iranians, and other nations all hacked into that server. Now, the headline on the Daily Caller is, sources, China hacked Hillary Clinton's private email server. A Chinese-owned company penetrated former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's private server, according to sources briefed on the matter. The company inserted code that forwarded copies of Clinton's emails to the Chinese company in real time. The intelligence community inspector general warned of the problem, but the FBI subsequently failed to act. And Texas Republican, our buddy Louis Gohmert, said all of this and had picked up on this back at that July hearing. Anyway, the Chinese-owned company was operating in D.C. They hacked Hillary's private server, and it raises a lot of questions about, A, yeah, once again, the Espionage Act that she was never charged with because Peter Strzok and James Comey exonerated her before they even did an investigation. That is a crime. And then, of course, the deletions of subpoenaed emails and the deletions of a hard drive and the busting up of devices, well, it might be for nothing. Now, I guess if anybody said, well, I hope the Chinese release the emails, then I guess you'll be considered a puppet of the Chinese. But certainly it appears they have them. Joining us now, Richard Pollack. He is a reporter from The Daily Caller. He's broken this huge story. Also, Scott Uhlinger is back with us, retired CIA ops officer, Russian intel operations expert. All right, so
thank you.
How certain are you of this reporting that the whole thing was hacked?
I'm very certain. Not only do I have multiple sources that I quote in the article that the Chinese government launched a very sophisticated intelligence operation against Hillary Clinton, and what is most breathtaking to me, and in real time, they were able to intercept her emails, both going in, incoming, as well as outgoing. Since the article has run, I've had actually another intelligence official contact me to confirm the story as well. And this is perhaps one of the greatest national security breaches in the history of this country, in my opinion, because you have to understand whoever was listening, or in this case, was actually copying. Let me just say one thing. They said, the intelligence sources, that each time an email came in or went out, there was a courtesy copy that was produced especially for the Chinese government. So in real time, within seconds, they're seeing the conversation the secretary's having about negotiations, discussions with heads of state, armament issues, military, tactical and diplomatic issues, all of that within seconds, the Chinese government is reading it in real time. And this is just simply, I think, probably one of the biggest national security scandals of the, of our history.
Well, what I don't understand is I'm sure they never erased one of them. That would mean we could get a hold of all 33,000, right?
They got all 30,000 of them, absolutely. And I think, I don't have any evidence of it, but the people I've been speaking to, the sources believe that they also probably shared some of this intelligence with their allies, North Korea, perhaps with Iran, perhaps with other heads of state and other governments. And we're not saying that this is the only foreign hostile actor or state that penetrated the system. I believe that there were probably other countries that were also sort of listening in as well. But this one is, in fact, confirmed. It's confirmed by multiple sources from the intelligence community.
None of this is a surprise to me, Scott. Does it raise questions about maybe everybody saying it's Russia, Russia, Russia? Could it have been China? Or is it, as I suspect, it was probably Russia, China, North Korea, Iran, and probably other hostile nations?
Yeah, Sean, I agree with you. I believe, you know, this bathroom server had no security controls on it. And in fact, it was almost certainly penetrated by multiple actors, the countries you said, Iran, North Korea, Russia, and China. There's no doubt about it. But what's really interesting, and I'm really happy that Mr. Pollack wrote this article, is that the time factor. The inspector general found out about this in early 2015, and they briefed the FBI, including Strzok, but nobody was going to tell Hillary to stop using her private server. And so it continued. The information bleed out continued. And that is absolutely
Is that why when Strzok eventually gets involved in this, that he could have even been implicated himself for not having done the due diligence, knowing a year earlier that, in fact, this was going on?
I think it's absolutely. I mean, it's monstrous that none of these people seem to have done their jobs. And this is what happens when PC outshines actual performance in a government bureaucracy.
But Hillary was not the Secretary of State, though, at that point, though, in 2015.
Right,
she was out running for president.
It would have reflected poorly on her candidacy. Exactly. But the fact that it certainly shows that Strzok was in the tank from the beginning. with Hillary Clinton and was willing to overlook basically fulfilling his job responsibility. He has a mandate to protect the American people against CIA incursions, and he did nothing.
Now, it became a big deal at some point during the campaign when Donald Trump said, Richard Pollack, well, maybe they'll share the, maybe the Russians will share their emails with us. You know, because there's still, you know, look, the intel community is pretty, they're almost universal in their belief that the hackings took place by Russia. And that would be the DNC and Podesta, et cetera. Nobody's ever shown us any evidence to back up that point. And when I interviewed Julian Assange, I specifically asked, did you get this from Russia? He said, no, I did not get it from Russia. Anybody associated with Russia? No, no state party. So, I don't know what to think, except that I think what Scott is saying is dead on accurate, is that there was such a vulnerability and we now know that our enemies are trying to hack into everything, that it could have been any number of these people, or probably were any number of them.
So certainly
they would have shared with one another also. The Chinese would have shared it with the Russians, et cetera.
You think so?
Certainly in ways that would enhance their relationships. I'm sure that they would give each other selected snippets of information of interest. Absolutely.
Why do you think that if they wanted to get to the bottom of it, why didn't they go to WikiLeaks, which did make it public? And by the way, it wasn't just WikiLeaks. So too did the New York Times when they got it and everybody else reported it. So, you know, why didn't they say, well, where'd you get it? Do you have any evidence of where you got it from? Why wouldn't they ask him?
Look, you know, the major media has decided to ignore the whole question of the vulnerability of the secretary's communications, including some of the most sensitive secrets that this country has. And they're not interested. It's not in their interest to go and pursue this. And that's what you've been saying for years now. Yes, in 2015, the ICIG did determine that there was anomalies in the emails, and they began to do a real due diligence, a thorough search, and then went to the FBI, in which Peter Strzok was in one of several meetings in which they made their presentations. My sources tell me that Strzok just looked at them coldly in a very hard way. He was indicating he was not interested in this information. He was actually apparently very close to enraged that they should come to him with this kind of information. So Strzok, and you saw it in Strzok's two-way with the Congressman Gohmert. Imagine someone comes to you of great credibility and says that there's a national intelligence operation against the Secretary of State and all of these secrets, and you're the top counterintelligence official at the FBI, which is what Strzok's position was. You would immediately be ringing bells. You would be immediately launching investigations. You would be then bringing other members of the intelligence community in there. He says our good friend Congressman Gohmert, who had the courage to do this, he said, I don't recall that conversation.
All right, we take a break. We'll come back more with Richard Pollack, and Scott Eulinger is with us. 800-941-SEAN is our number. Your call's at the bottom of this half hour. All right, as we continue, Richard Pollack, reporter, Daily Caller, and Scott Eulinger is with us, retired CIA ops officer, Russian intel ops expert. I have one big question. You know, all of this, sure. If you go back to Assange, when he was young, 16, breaks into the DOD, breaks into NASA, you know, now he's in his mid-40s. At what point does America have to look in the mirror and say that we have not done a good enough job of preventing these type of cyber attacks? We're not protecting our national secrets. At what time do we make it a national security issue so that nobody has the capacity ever to hack into anything in the United States? Scott, to me, basic, you know, that you build the sword, you build the shield. We've known now for 40 years that people are hacking into us, and we're not doing anything
that's
about
it.
They keep doing it and doing it and doing it. And when does it become our fault?
That's right. I think we've passed that point. We've passed that point now. It is our fault. I mean, the United States is being bled dry of its secrets, from the Chinese hacking of the Office of Personnel Management to stealing the F-35 designs to what we have in front of us now, to Senator Feinstein's driver who was working for the Chinese. All of these things are swept under the rug. But the real problem is that we are hemorrhaging out secrets at an unprecedented rate, and it must stop.
Let me ask you both this. I mean, From what I understand, and I've done some background and research into this, we have like 250,000 U.S. government IT employees. And I understand that some of these bad actors are really smart and clever, and they're very, very, you know, there's a level of genius and brilliance associated with what they're able to do with computers. But are we saying that we have to throw our hands up and we can't defend against these attacks?
Well, I think one of the issues here is that a considerable number of these folks who have security clearances, some of them are actually foreign nationals under the H-1B program that work for the consulting firms that consult for either the intelligence community or the CIA. I mean, this is an open book at this point. And this is where Scott is absolutely 100% right. You were probably old enough to remember the party line on phones. You had a private line or a party line, and the party line, you shared it with other people. Well, I think that the...
Okay, I'm not that old. Thank you very much. I do remember a dial rotary phone. That's as far back as you're getting me. Thank you very much.
All right. Nevertheless, Hillary Clinton's server was on a party line. That was not a private line. But that is only one of the many cybersecurity attacks that this government and our industries have faced.
But aren't we risking sources and methods? Didn't she put lives in jeopardy?
I think that is very possible just from the sheer volume of information that the Chinese had access to. You know, one thing that as an ops officer, you sometimes stay awake at night thinking about is if you have one high official say the wrong thing or leaks out a document, it could undo all the work that one well-trained operations officer did maybe for several years. So what we're looking at with this is, you know, is a similar thing. Her flouting of the law with her junk server, I'm sure it threw away thousands of man hours of work of hardworking patriots such as myself. It just made all that work useless. Millions of dollars and possibly even the lives of some people who may not have been sources of information, but maybe the subject of some of her emails, different people crusading for human rights in Africa, maybe were eliminated because of her emails, because this stuff should not have been public knowledge.
All right, I want to thank you both for being with us. Richard Pollack, great report with the Daily Caller. We'll continue to follow that up. Scott, thank you so much for being with us. 800-941-SEAN is our toll-free telephone number. Right to our phones when we get back. 800-941-SEAN is our number. Cool. All right, we're going to have a lot more by the time we get on television tonight, 9 Eastern on the Fox News Channel. Bruce Orr, I have spoken now with a number of people that know it was a hell of a day with his testimony. A lot of it in conflict. Look, to put it very, very simply, he's had to admit to a lot more than a lot of people thought he was going to admit to. And I think that's perfect for everybody. But, you know, the bottom line is, by all accounts, it went very well today. And we're going to find out what actually went on in that as the rest of the day goes on. But, you know, let's take you back. We have, of course, the mainstream media coverage, John Brennan, everything Bruce Orr did was approved. Well, he wouldn't know that. He shouldn't know that. Mark Meadows saying we have evidence that suggests the FBI agents were told there was no collusion but was ignored. That is a huge statement. Well, Ron DeSantis, who joined us earlier, Bruce Orr almost served as the intermediary between the Clinton campaign, Fusion GPS, Obama's DOJ, and I would even add to that, of course, the foreign national that was putting together Russian lies that he didn't believe in, Christopher Steele. And you got Matt Gaetz. Rosenstein won't tell us when he knew that Nellie Orr worked for Fusion GPS. Yeah, that'd be a smoking gun. Here's some of the tape I'm talking about.
It's my understanding that everything that Bruce Orr did was approved and known to senior Department of Justice officials, coordinated closely with the FBI. So I think this is something that, you know, will have to be looked at. I don't know all the facts here, but I think some of the facts that are being purported by some members of Congress may not, in fact, be the actual facts.
Will Bruce Orr verify what we already know? One of the interesting things is that we have evidence that would suggest that FBI informants were told that there was no collusion. collusion, and yet it seemed to be ignored. So we're going to ask Bruce Orr about that. Additionally, when you have Christopher Steele and Nellie Orr being paid tens of thousands, and in some cases hundreds of thousands of dollars, to put forth a false dossier, why would they rely so much on those two witnesses and ignore others? So there's about 60-plus questions that I have. Hopefully we'll get some truth, be able to report back to you, but we're looking to honestly have a full day of questioning here.
What are you anxious to hear from Bruce Orr?
Well, I want to know his precise role. I mean, we know just from the documents that we have that he was functioning almost as an intermediary between the Clinton campaign and Fusion GPS and the Obama Justice Department. He was one of the highest ranking officials in Obama's Justice Department, reporting directly to the anti-Trump Deputy Attorney General Sally Yates. So it's really an unprecedented use of official prosecutorial resources to have him that deeply involved in generating this opposition research. We need to know who else at the FBI knew what he was doing. We need to know when he started dealing with people like Glenn Simpson at Fusion GPS, what his interactions were with Christopher Steele, and the financial interests that he had in stake, because his wife, Nellie Orr, worked for Fusion GPS, and you're not allowed to be a federal official and participate in matters that you have a financial interest. So I think there's a whole host of questions, but he really is a critical kind of wheel in this whole collusion cog that we've been able to expose over the last few months.
Judge, I wanted to make a point about what Greg just said. Rod Rosenstein won't tell us when he first learned that Nellie Orr was working for Fusion GPS. So I want to know from Bruce Orr, when did he tell his colleagues at the Department of Justice that in violation of the law that required him to disclose his wife's occupation and her sources of income, he did not do that? And so when did all the other people at the Department of Justice find this out? Because Rod Rosenstein, I've asked him twice in open hearing, and he will not give an answer. I think there's a real smoking gun there.
All right, so a big day. We'll have full, complete reaction coverage and what this means. And when will we get a transcript of all of this, I think, is the next most important aspect here. Let's go to Tim in Mississippi. Tim, hi, how are you? You're on the Sean Hannity Show.
I'm doing great, Sean. Big fan.
Thank you, sir.
Real quick, I'm looking at the end game, and I don't think they have any choice but to do such a large dragnet, because they have to find something on Trump. If they don't, we know Sessions is going to be gone. We know Mueller is going to be gone. We know all the DOJ top brass is going to be gone. And then a new AG is going to be put in that's going to be more like into what Trump wants to accomplish. And all these misdeeds by the FBI and everything is going to be exposed. I think it's huge, a lot bigger than what it
is. Well, that's why 70 days from now, on Election Day, you know, 70%. 70 days from now, I'm telling you right now, it's going to be a big, dramatic change if Republicans lose power. They're going to bury all the evidence. And
not only that, but none of the Republicans will want to be associated. If he does get any kind of impeachment, none of the Republicans are going to want to be involved in any future investigations or anything. They will find something on Trump. They will sacrifice the president.
I've been saying this for a while. We know what this is going to be. This is going to be Robert Mueller drawing up a map for Democrats to follow should they get power in 70 days to impeach the president. That's what their goal is. That's what they want to do, and that's what they're going to do. You know, the question is, do we have an interim fight over a subpoena or not? And we don't know the answer to that yet, so we'll find out when it happens.
Right? And I think if the Republicans don't start moving on this stuff, it's all going to be buried.
70 days. This midterm election matters. If you voted for the president, you like the results, if you like the unemployment numbers, if you like the stronger national security policy, if you like him pushing for the wall, if you like endless burdensome regulation, if you like new businesses popping up everywhere, if you like that we have more jobs available than people on unemployment in the country, if you like millions of fewer people on food stamps, millions fewer in poverty, record low unemployment for 14 states, for African Americans, Hispanic Americans, Asian Americans, women in the workplace, youth unemployment now at an all-time low in, what, two decades. All of this, consumer confidence at an 18-year high. If you like it, you want to continue it, you got to vote in 70 days. It's that important. That's all I'll say to anybody that wants to listen. Let's go to Pensacola, Florida. They get an extra hour to vote tonight. I guess the polls in Florida close at 7, And I think for you, it closes at 8, if I'm not mistaken.
That is correct, Sean. Thank you for having me on. I'm really well. And I just want to thank you, first and foremost, for your support of Ron DeSantis. People down here are really, really super excited about DeSantis, mainly because, and your talk about the economy, is the main reason why. Florida just hit a $1 trillion GDP this year. That makes us the fourth largest economy in the country and the 17th in the world. It's awesome, right?
Listen, it's awesome. My only fear for Florida and Texas, I have two fears for both states, they're great states, and the Carolinas, to be honest, because I know a lot of people from New York and New Jersey and Illinois, they tend to go to the Carolinas or they go to Florida. And then you have all Californians heading on out to Texas. You know, the problem is if they're welcome to go to those states, but don't bring your dumb, stupid, liberal, big tax and spend policies with you. You already destroyed the state you came from or participated in it. Don't do the same to the rest of the country, because Florida is doing perfectly well without a state income tax, as is Texas, and the Carolinas with very low taxes.
That's right. And that's why we need to have a governor here who has the ear of President Trump and has shown that he will and can work with President Trump to continue these economic policies that are making Florida strong. This isn't an accidental economy. It's taken a lot of work, and we've had significant gains in manufacturing that are a direct result of the Trump policies. So we have to have a governor that's going to work with Mr. Trump, and Ron DeSantis is that guy.
Listen, I'm a big Ron DeSantis guy, so you don't have to sell me. I was down. I actually did some town halls with him over the 4th of July weekend, had a great time. We were in the Panhandle in Pensacola, and we were, where else were we? We were in Tampa. We were in Fort Myers. We had a great time. Really good time.
Yeah.
And by the way, he's right. Since I was there, his poll numbers did go up. So I get a little bit of the credit, at least. I'm teasing.
And we thank you for it. We want to keep Florida strong, and your support of DeSantis has definitely done that.
Yeah, he'll do a great job for your state, as will Governor Rick Scott, who I've come to be very fond of. I know him better than anybody.
He's a great guy.
I used to know Rick Perry, Rick Scott, and Bobby Jindal. I know those three governors better than any in the country. Because
they're the best governors.
Well, they are, but what they'd always be in New York, and they know that we have a big presence in all their states. But they'd always come up to New York for the purpose of meeting with New York businesses and enticing them to move to their respective states. And they were all very successful at it. And they kept coming back for meetings again and again and again. I'd be like, what are you doing here? Because I'm trying to take some of your business back to my state. And all they would do is talk about the great business environment, the low taxes, and the regulatory environment being one that is conducive to making a lot more money for business. And guess what? A lot of businesses listened, and they're leaving. The amount of wealth that has left New York and New Jersey, you cannot believe the numbers. It's massive amounts of money. It's like escape from New York. They can't get out fast enough. I'm going to be the last one to turn the lights out, of course, because I'm working. But anyway, people go to these states. Don't bring your dumb policies with you. Thank you, Stephanie. Appreciate it. Christopher's in Alabama. Christopher, hi. How are you? Glad you called.
Doing great today, Sean. Thank you for having me on the air.
Yes, sir. What's going on?
Previously, I didn't go and vote. I just never felt like it made a difference or what have you. But when Trump ran for office, I had started noticing before that, okay, something's going on. We need a change. I started paying a little bit more to the attention of what was going on in the government. As the people knew what they were getting when they voted for Trump. We knew we wasn't getting a poster child for a president. We wasn't getting a perfect, you know, what the Democrats and the leftists want to view as, you know, let's put them out here. It doesn't matter what they know or what they accomplish. It's how they look. That's not what we wanted. We wanted someone that was going to get out there and fight for the American people. And that's what we voted for. And we're sick and tired of them trying to bully him or block him from doing the things that we voted for. Russia didn't show up at my house. They didn't send me nothing to get me to vote. I voted because I wanted to vote and make a difference, and I was ready for something different.
Yeah, listen, and what I would say to you is, you know, they've tried to undermine him in ways we didn't know before the election. They tried to prevent. They cheated their way. Every single way they could cheat, they did. You know, nobody seems to care that Hillary paid for Russian lies, and those lies were repeated, disseminated, and used to propagandize, mislead, misinform, disinform the American people before the election. She pulled it off with Bernie. Why not try it again? And then it was used for the nefarious purpose also of getting, you know, spying on the Trump campaign and getting FISA warrants based on unverified, uncorroborated, Hillary Clinton bought and paid for Russian lies that have now been debunked. It's terrible. And the fact that nobody's being held responsible to date, I think we're going to get there, is beyond frustrating considering the level of deep concern that Mueller and his team have about taxi medallions and, you know, decades old tax returns and loan applications from years gone by. So we haven't found anything Russian that in this whole thing, but there's plenty of Russia, you know, dirt that was pushed during the election.
Well, exactly. And like you said, nobody's being held accountable. There's two different tiers of justice here. And if that's what people want, if people want their neighbor to be able to go out and do something and get away with it, but then them be treated like they're just the worst person, then don't go vote.
Yeah. Well, you know, listen, I'm telling you, this vote matters. This vote matters big time.
It does.
There's a lot at stake here. I'm telling you the truth. I don't lie. This is a big deal. And by the way, it's an uphill battle. You got to fight just like you would, just like it was 2016 all over again. So anyway, I appreciate it. Pam is in Hampton, Virginia. Pam, we'll move on to you. How are you today?
I'm all right, sir. How are you?
I'm good. What's going on?
Good. I just wanted to touch base. I am like just Joe average person here in America, and I am watching this thing unfold like a monster, and Mueller goes on and destroys life after life after life. And as soon as he does not get what he wants, he's on to the next life to destroy. And he's leaving a path of destruction that I don't know if Americans will get over. We try our best to be fair and be the kind person, be the Christian, turn the other cheek, do what you're supposed to do, treat your fellow human with respect. And we look at this, and he's just creating this weight of destruction behind him that is horrible. And it's horrible for the people that whose lives he's touching that have done nothing. They have done nothing to warrant the way he's tearing them apart. And how do we get over that? As an American, how do we get past this and get on to being American? Being,
you know, the best thing you can do, I'll say it every day for 70 days. You have to vote. You have to see that the entire agenda that you voted for in 2016 is hanging in the balance, because it is. All right, that's going to wrap things up for today. We will have full coverage. Bruce Orr testifying today on Capitol Hill. News that I'm sure the mainstream media will ignore. Sarah and Greg, Joe DeGeneva, Mark Penn, Kimberly Strassel from the Wall Street Journal, David Schoen, Ari Fleischer, and much more. Tonight, 9 Eastern, set your DVR. Hannity on the Fox News Channel. We have an important monologue that puts everything into perspective. Our progress is not stopping. And don't forget, 70 days to the most important midterm in your lifetime. All right, we'll see you tonight at 9, back here tomorrow.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty. We're the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We cover the stories the mainstream media ignores.
Stories that are important to your life and important to the world.
The election, of course.
The many trials of Donald Trump.
Couple of wars.
Gender-bending madness.
Why are kids looking at so much social media?
And we bring you the stories the mainstream media is on.
But we do it without the left-wing media spin.
Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Open your free iHeart app and search the Armstrong and Getty Show to start listening.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast. This week, I talked to Orlando Bloom in a rare interview where we went deep into how to get comfortable with fear and how to change the guilt and shame thought pattern.
People say, what are you afraid of, right? I'm afraid of fear because it's like I want to confront anything in my life that feels challenging on those levels.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.